Hi everyone, and welcome to the BGS podcast. I'm Ayman, the founder of BGS, and your host today. I'm here today with Debbie. Hi, Debbie.
Hi.
Can you introduce yourself to our audience?
Sure. So I'm Debbie. I live in Mallorca, which is not a bad place to live. And I work for Microsoft, specializing in making sure the world is testing and using Playwright. And as most of you who have been following me, I do a lot of sport. I absolutely love sport. And recently my sport has changed because I just gave birth to twins literally 3 months ago. This is the first time I've said that on air. That's kind of weird. It doesn't feel right. It's like, I'm a mother. Oh my God. How did that happen?
Oh my God. Congratulations for the twins.
Thank you.
By the way. And you mentioned living in Mallorca. How is the weather there right now?
It's a little cold and windy, but then my cold is definitely not like your cold. So, yeah. You know, it's like, put a hoodie on, it's cold, right? And you're like, obviously with a scarf and hat and gloves, and it's cold. So it's different cold, but it's not like a summer's day, but we haven't had a winter this year. It's been really, really good weather.
Oh, nice, nice. Yeah, because one of my basic complaints with Belgium is the weather. Like, it's always raining and cold. So
yeah.
I envy you for the weather.
So, I need to come here more often.
Yeah, I do. It's on the plans. We'll see if it's possible with work. So Debbie, can you tell us a little bit more about how did your coding journey start? How did you fall in love with coding, if you did, and so on?
Yeah, it's a long story, actually. So I'm going to try and give you like the really reduced down version. But I actually studied web design, as it was called, like back in the 90s, right? I was actually studying to be a secretary, and I was bored in the secretarial course, and I went to join my friend's course, just sitting in a class, and she was doing like graphic design, and there was a computer there with Photoshop, and it was all like, wow. So I just kind of like really started to kind of like it and ask, could I do that course as well? So I ended up doing the secretarial course plus the graphic and web design. And I worked for a year after that on a really boring, using Dreamweaver, computer manuals, printer manuals, and making sure all the text in different languages was in the right place. It was just like, it was really boring. It was like, we were doing websites at Dreamweaver, but it was 90s. There wasn't much color and much action. So I got bored and I left, and I went to Mallorca to work on a stage doing entertainment because that was just so much more fun. I was like 20, you know, I was like young and just, you know. So, yeah, that's what I did. And I spent many years basically working in the hotel industry. And then I went into teaching and I started being an English teacher, teaching English to, you know, to foreign language people here. And then I was out of a job all the time because I only had a job in the summer in the hotel, or I was teaching English in the winter and I wasn't getting a lot of money, and it wasn't my dream. It wasn't what I wanted to do. So I went back. It's about like, I think it's like 6 years ago now, and decided to give my career one more go. I was like, right, one more time. I'm going to like put everything into it and I'm going to try and get back into tech, you know? And I had done a couple of like jobs myself in tech before that, right? I'd worked for a couple of companies and I'd set up my own company and I'd done websites with WordPress and all the usual kind of Flash first and then WordPress and blah, blah, blah. But I'd got to a stage where nobody would hire me, right? Mm-hmm. So nobody would hire me because all I had was HTML and CSS. And I was really good at HTML and CSS. But that doesn't count for anything nowadays in the front end world. And that's terrible because it really should. So yeah, I was out of a job and I was doing other stuff. And that's when I went back to fully studying JavaScript and mastering JavaScript. And I really didn't think I was clever enough because I just kind of thought I was more like the design kind of side, the graphic design and the CSS part. And I didn't think I could do the what I called a real programmer style of actually doing JavaScript. So I learned JavaScript with the intention of trying to get a job eventually as a proper programmer. And I gave up my English teaching. I gave up everything. And I just literally studied for about 9 months nonstop every day, 7 days a week. I was running on a running machine and I was doing a course while I was running on the running machine. Every time I was like lifting weights, and then in between the weights, that 1 minute you have to wait between the next, I was like studying. So it was it was unreal. But I was determined to, like, this is my last go. And if I don't make it work and I don't get a job in tech, then I'll just go and work in a bar and work in a hotel or be an English teacher or whatever. So it was like, this is do it now or never. So yeah, it worked and I got a job and here I am today. So it was worth all the hard work and all the kind of like perseverance of, you know, can I do this? Can I do this? Yes, you can. Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's the short version.
That's so inspiring. And I mean, congrats on doing that, because I can imagine how hard it was to like quit everything and try again from scratch, especially with everything evolving so much in the tech industry, etc. So yeah, congrats.
And financially as well, because financially, yeah. You think, like, I put all my savings, everything I had into it. My husband was freaking out because he's like, Debbie, like, we've got no money coming in now, you know, there's only one wage coming in, we've got to pay for everything. What if it doesn't work out? And I was like, look, if it doesn't work out, I will easily get a job in a bar. The bars will always employ me, so I'll always be able to make money. So it's going to be fine. Like, we can make this work. We just have to do it and hope for the best. But yeah, it meant a lot of, you know, not having money for quite a bit and just struggling and just saying maybe it's going to be worth it, and oh my God, like, it was so worth it.
I totally agree with that. Like, it's a lot of sacrifices, but it usually pays off when you do the hard work behind it. So
yeah, because
like,
people see the, yeah. Sorry, people see like the speaker on the stage, right? The person on the video, and they just see the good, and they see like, oh, this person has it easy. They don't have to study. They just know everything. And it's kind of like, no, we all have a story. And every single one of us in the tech was not born programming. Everyone had to learn. Yeah. Some had to learn in different ways or whatever, but everyone has a story, and people should seriously remember that anyone else can be us, can be one of us, right?
Yeah, exactly. With the right, like, how can I say, with the right motivation, like, you can do whatever you want to do. And that's one of the really amazing things that I like about JavaScript in general. It's that it opens so many opportunities to people. Like, it kind of lowered the barrier to entry, if I can say it, mm-hmm. like that. And it became way more easy for people without a degree, without anything, to actually get a job and get into tech and try things and build things. And I think that's amazing. I don't think before, like, JavaScript became so popular, it was that easy to actually like start working in the tech industry, I think.
I think the frameworks made it easier, right? Before frameworks, we were like, you know, building everything just with our own, with JavaScript. And there was like, obviously JavaScript has improved and got better and better. And obviously TypeScript has come along and even made it, you know, solidified it. So it's much, you know, stronger as a language. But the frameworks have made our lives so much easier that we can build a website super easy without having to really go that deep into JavaScript, because JavaScript isn't easy, right? JavaScript, if you really, really, really learn it properly, it is quite difficult, and there are lots of difficult parts to it. But you don't need to know everything in JavaScript to be able to build a website and to be able to get that job. You can always master JavaScript. I'm still mastering JavaScript.
Little by little.
Right? I'll never know it all.
you learn something new every day. I think that's one of the things that I like also our job as programmers, is that you continue learning, and it's kind of a cycle. Like, every day you sometimes feel so stupid because you're learning something new and you don't know how it works, and you continue your whole life like that. I think it's kind of humbling in a way. Like, whatever your experience,
you'll never know everything.
Exactly.
And that's what makes it exciting, right? You can never be bored. You can never say, I have reached the top, I know everything. It's never going to happen. Yeah. So just accept that. And also kind of like, there's branches. It's like a tree, right? And there's so many different branches and different things to learn. And you can say, right, I'm done with JavaScript. I've learned everything about JavaScript. But then go and do Python. go and do C sharp, go and do something. There's so many languages to study in tech, and there's so much work. It's a brilliant industry to be in.
I think the same, actually. So you mentioned that you were a Google developer expert, a Microsoft MVP, etc. I saw that on your website. So, like, how were you able to acquire so many actual that kind of highlight titles in your career, even though you started, that was, you said, 6 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have no idea. Like, literally, it's incredible, and it's unbelievable. I think what happened was I was going to conferences, right? And I was looking at other people and kind of using them as like as a mentor and kind of saying, look at what that person has achieved. Look what that person has done. I want to do that. And then I kind of try and figure out how can I get to where they are, never ever thinking I'd ever get there, but kind of like, you know, following in their footsteps, I guess. You know, if they're writing a blog post, maybe I should start writing blog posts. What are they writing on? What else are they doing? They're doing podcasts, they're doing videos, and you just kind of start like looking up to a certain person or certain people and following their footsteps of how they got there, and then looking into these programs and saying, okay, I'm never going to be good enough to be accepted in this program, but what if I did the work to try and maybe get to there? And then, like, you know, I end up doing the work, and without even knowing it, next minute I'm there and I've achieved what I need to achieve, but I didn't know I was ever going to make it. I did the work. And one of the things that I was doing was also, I was making sure I was giving back to the community. I was writing a blog post to help somebody else. I was writing this not to get into the program, but to, like, you know, for me, it's all about community. So the more you help other people, you end up just getting so much more back. But yeah, the program surprised me because I never, like, the GitHub star, I never, ever, ever imagined that people would nominate me to be a GitHub star. I was like, how did that even happen? And I still don't know how it happened. I'd have to ask all the people who nominated me and say, why on earth did you nominate me? Like, what have I done? But maybe it's because of the videos I've created, the courses I've created, and all the work I've tried to do to help other people learn, especially in the Vue community with Nuxt. I think it was maybe that. I hope it was that. I don't know. But yeah, hard work, determination, helping the community, and just giving back, always giving back to other people.
That's also like something that I really like about our industry, is that like it's so open compared to other industries. Like, for example, if you take the finance sector, everything is so closed and everything is top secret, and you actually can get fired if you share stuff with others. But in our industry, it's the complete opposite. Like, sharing with other people by speaking at conferences, contributing to open source, or even discussing on Twitter, it opens so much opportunities to you. And I really like that about our community.
Yeah, especially open source. And I've been very lucky to be working in open source for such a long time now. And for me, open source is everything. It's like, this code is free for you to use. But not just that, you can help us make it better. Because if we as a team of a small amount of people can build something, our knowledge can only go so far. But if other people contribute back to us, that knowledge gets extended to a field that you'd never, ever be able to. You'd never hire that person or all these other people that are going to help out. So it really is like how we grow in the tech so fast is thanks to the community, thanks to people contributing, thanks to people sharing information. And that's why it's such a cool place to work, because you're always just like, there's no competition. There's no like, I'm better than you. I know more than you. I know something that you don't know. It's like, I found this out. You should know about it. Let me tell you what I learned today. That's the way it is. And I think the whole world should learn from the tech industry.
I totally agree with that. It's amazing to work in an environment that is done this way. Like, and it's true that other fields should learn from that. To come back to the different titles, like, imagine if someone would like to become a Google Developer Expert or Microsoft MVP, what would be your advice to them? Where should they start?
That's a great question. I guess it depends on, like, you know, okay, so you want to be part of this program, and it's great because there's so many other of the programs. So think about why you want to be part of this program, and really kind of understand what the program is about. So make sure that you want to be part of the program, not just to have a certificate on your wall, right? Because that is good. It's a good reason, but it's not going to get you into the program. It's really about community. And it's really about, why do you want to be in the program? Because I want to help others, and I want to be able to reach more people so that my blog post that's getting 100 views gets 1,000 views, because those 1,000 people are going to learn more. And how can I help more people? How can I get my knowledge out there to the rest? So how do you get started? Start, like I said, follow other people who are already in the program. Right. You could say, follow me. no, but like, there are so many other people as well. So don't always follow me. But I don't always do everything right. But look at all the other people that are out there. Right. And kind of say, what are they doing? And even just connect and talk to them. Like, I walked up to a Google developer expert after his talk, after his workshop, actually. And I went up and I said, it was Harry Roberts. And I went, tell me more about the program. How can I be part of this? And he started telling me a little bit. So make sure you make connections, because especially Google Developer Experts, you need to be nominated by someone. And unless you kind of make that connection with someone and they see the work that you're doing and they see you, you know, speaking at conferences or creating that material or doing that work. So yeah, I would say decide which program you like, which one that you want to be part of, and work towards it. Have a goal, write down your goal and kind of say, right, in the next 2 years, I'm going to be a Google Developer Expert. Now, what do I need to get there in the next 2 years? Be very clear about what you need to get there. Speak to people who are already in the program. And we do a lot. I do a lot of work with the Google Developer Experts program for women. And I mentor them in the they do an academy for helping other women get into the Google Developer Expert program. So check those out if you are a woman in tech that wants to get into those programs. And yeah, I don't know what else to say. Every program is different, but check them out and just be like constantly doing stuff, you know, constantly giving back. Don't give up as well. It's another thing. It's not easy to be in the program. It doesn't just happen overnight. It doesn't just like click your fingers and you're there, right? Anyone that's got in the program has worked really hard to get there. So be prepared to work hard.
Yeah, I can imagine. And you mentioned that there are some mentoring programs for some of these programs. So like where can people find those out, or are like are they easy to find? Or
yeah, I don't know, because I never seem to easily find them, but then I'm contacted and asked to mentor and speak at them, which is how I find out about them. So I would check the Google website for the Google Developer Expert one, because they do the Women Academy every mm-hmm. year. They do one in different countries. It's like online, obviously, but they do one like for time zone wise, you know. Okay. So I would check out the website of the Google Developer Expert program and see what they have. I know in the MVP program, we don't have one so far, but definitely just keep checking. And again, if you're following the people, because I will tweet about it when I see it opening up, when, you know, when they ask me to speak at such event, I will send a tweet and say, hey, sign up for this. And then like, obviously, you have to have done some of the work to kind of get into the program, right? So you have to already be starting so that we can mentor you, to guide you, to bring you towards the end of it. So the Road to GDE is one of the programs I worked on. So check that, maybe Google that as well.
Awesome. You mentioned that you spoke at conferences, and to me, you're one of the best speakers that I've ever seen.
Aww.
Like the energy that, no, but to be honest, like the energy that you give is amazing, you know? And so when we organize conferences, like for me, in my opinion, one of the most difficult talks to choose or to decide is the talk that is directly after lunch. And usually when you or Tejas are speaking at one of our conferences, I know that it's probably going to be you, because your energy you give on stage is just amazing.
Yeah, so but then I don't eat back. Because my stomach is like all kind of like nervous, and I get so nervous before every talk, seriously. And then I'm like, oh my God, they always put me after lunch, and now Debbie's not going to have any food. And then I come off and I'm starving.
Seriously, like you still get nervous after all the talks?
Yeah. It doesn't matter what I do. I get so nervous. Like they'll mic me up and I'll like, I've got to go pee again. I'm like so nervous. And sometimes I do jumping jacks to kind of like get rid of my nerves. Like you'll see me backstage and I'm like, you're probably thinking like, oh, she's so energetic. No, that's me getting rid of my nerves. I always get scared. And what I do is like, I walk out on stage, right? And I'm like, oh my God, how am I going to do this? I'm going to freak out. And then I put a slide up about myself and I talk about me. And it's a bit selfish of me, but I talk about me for about 3 minutes and I talk about sport because I don't have to remember anything about that. My brain doesn't have to process about me. I know about me. And then once I feel comfortable on the stage and I've read my audience and now I'm kind of going, oh, these are all nice people. They're not throwing tomatoes at me. We're good. And then I can go into the tech stuff and I feel more confident. But yeah, I always get nervous. I don't know how to get rid of that.
Wow. That's such a good advice, actually, to do the bit about yourself first, because you actually don't have to overthink that one. So, yeah, exactly. That's a really good advice. So how did you actually start speaking at conferences? Like, how did you have the idea for your first talk? Was it related to your current work, or how did it happen?
Yeah. So I was I got a free entrance into a conference that was in Mallorca, and I attended the conference and I seen the speakers on the stage, and there was a talk about imposter syndrome. And I watched that talk and I went, oh my God, that is me. That is so me. So I went up to the speaker afterwards and I said, I really want to speak at conferences. I've got stage experience. I used to work in theaters and drama. I love the stage. I have no problem of walking out in front of 1,000 people. Don't make me walk out in front of one person. That would scare the hell out of me. But 1,000 people, give me 1,000 people. Easy. But I said, I don't know enough about tech to walk out in front of a room of professionals, experts. I can't do that. And that's where the help came from. It was a woman called Denise. And she said to me like, yeah, but you think they're experts. What makes them experts in your eyes? Why are they experts? Like, you don't know. You have absolutely no idea what they know, and you have absolutely no idea what they don't know. And someone else said to me, if we don't go telling a story, like speaking about telling a story, if we don't tell stories, then, you know, there's nothing else to share, right? Everyone has a different story. So the way I'm going to teach you something is like a story. And I'm going to tell you how to do something, how to test your applications, for example. But my story is going to be different to how you are going to tell someone. So everyone, even though it's already been said before, maybe it's a different story to tell. So I was like, okay, it's still scared, but like her words and her advice, you know, was good. And then I basically, you know, came back to my company that I was working for. And I was like, you know, I want to speak at a conference, but I don't know what to speak about. And we had just built our own framework. So the company were like, and my boss is like, you know, let's give a talk about this. And they helped me to write the talk, but it was about our experience of all the problems we'd had about re-architecting a very big travel website and re-architecting the whole thing, building our own framework to help people's jobs, help make everything better. And what we learned along the way, all the problems we had and how we solved them or how we didn't solve some of them. And that was the talk. So it was something like, you're never going to learn to build a new framework from that my talk, but you will learn about maybe what you're doing could be improved, or maybe like you're actually not so bad in tech because, you know, we've made all these mistakes and so have you. Everyone makes mistakes in tech, so that's okay. So yeah, that was the first talk, and I got accepted at a conference in Lithuania, and that scared the hell out of me. I was like, oh my God, now I have to actually deliver the talk. Oh my God, I can't do this. It freaked me out. But I did really well. It was a good talk. It was because I didn't have to like teach anything, I think that was a good talk to start with, because it was me telling this story of this, I don't know how many months it was that we worked on that project. And it was something I was passionate about because we had changed the way the developers work and made their lives better. We'd learned a lot in the process. So yeah, so how do you choose talks? It's like, talk about something you're passionate about. And that made it easy for the first talk to get up there and not teach something, but just kind of like share an experience more than anything else.
Yeah, you mentioned something that is really important also, is the fact that your way of delivering a certain message is always unique to you. And I always say that to some friends of mine that are like, yeah, why would I talk about this already? 100 people talked about it. Why would I write a book about that? Because there is already 10 books about it or something. And I'm like, but your vision and the way you are going to deliver the message is unique to you. So you should always go for it. And I think that's really important to know if when starting to speak at conferences, etc.
Yeah. It's just like sport, right? Someone will teach you something in sport. You'll have different instructors and they teach you differently. And one thing will stick and you'll learn better from one person something. And because everybody learns different. Everybody is different. And it's kind of nice that we're all unique and we learn in different ways. And that makes all these different ways of teaching appropriate and useful.
Wow. And so actually, I wanted to ask, like, after all of these years speaking at conferences, do you know how many conferences did you speak at? Like, are you counting them or have no idea?
I don't know. I actually, do you know what? I have no idea. It is on my website because I tend to like put all the conferences up there if they've been recorded, but not all the conferences have been recorded. And I have, because when you do like the Google Developer Expert program, you would register all the kind of conference talks that you speak at, but only if you're speaking about a certain like products. And sometimes I'm speaking about something else that wouldn't get registered in there. So I don't know if I have, I have no idea. Oh my God, that's it. I need to figure that out. I'm intrigued now.
Actually, like you told me a story once that you you even spoke in Antarctica, like the continent.
Yes.
Can you tell us a bit more? Because I think it's like you're the only speaker I know that did that.
Yeah, there's only a few of us that have done it. So yeah, it was incredible. It was these speakers basically had this idea of organizing a conference on a cruise ship in Antarctica. Not to make money and not to kind of sell tickets. So it wasn't that kind of way of doing a conference. It was more like, so let's get a bunch of speakers together. Let's put them on a cruise ship and let's hold an internal conference. If anyone wants on the cruise ship wants to attend, but they're not going to go on a cruise to attend a conference, right? And basically it was a way of then these speakers saying that they've spoken every single continent in the world, because, you know, some of them have done every continent except Antarctica and now they've done that. But it was a really, really amazing time because we were like 17 days on a cruise ship. That was like 17 speaker dinners, 17 speaker lunches, 17 speaker breakfasts, right? But the nice thing was that we brought our families. So my husband was there. Other people had their children there. The children gave a talk as well, which is really, really inspiring to hear an 8-year-old get up and talk about what he'd built and the game he'd built. I thought that was brilliant. So it was really nice to see other people kind of, you know, just give talks in different ways. And we were not connected tech wise in, there was no theme, right? So it wasn't like all JavaScript. There was different kind of themes and stuff. It was really, really good. It was really unique. It was really hard because you were watching a talk sometimes. You're watching the talk, you're looking outside, you're like, penguin, iceberg. And you're like, it was insane. It was so cool. But then they were like, there's going to be like so many more icebergs. Believe me, we have like so many days of icebergs and so many days of penguins, so don't worry about it. But it was really nice to be able to give a talk on a cruise ship surrounded by icebergs and penguins. Definitely a unique experience. And then we did a lot of other stuff like unconference sessions, like talking about, like, it wasn't just the conference itself. The whole cruise, the whole event was just nonstop, you know, networking of people. And I grew so much as a speaker and as a person and as someone in tech from that time. It was like an intensive, like, course, basically, on everything that you can do to improve in the tech world. And it's a pity that it didn't continue, because we had great ideas of next year, we'll do one in some other cool place. But we literally came off that cruise ship and 2 weeks later, the world closed, right? And that's literally what happened. So there wasn't a lot of like us sharing photos and stuff about it. It just kind of like died off, all the hype, because, you know, what happened. But yeah, but it was amazing. I'd love to do it again. I would definitely recommend that everyone in the world goes to see Antarctica, to see what we're doing to the world, to see like how beautiful nature is, how incredible it is to hear nothing, just pure silence, and just see around you whales just jumping out of water and penguins swimming around you. It's insane. It's beautiful.
Wow. We need to do that. Maybe one of our BGS conferences, we can do it.
Yeah, definitely. I would come. I'll come.
Like, because, so when I started organizing conferences, my main vision was that at some point, it won't stop at Belgium itself. The main vision of it is that at some point, we will be able to bring all of these international speakers to countries where they don't usually go. Like, for example, in Tunisia, we don't have any tech conference. Yeah. For Morocco, as like in Morocco, there is one, DevOx, but it's not the same as in Europe or in the US. And so my vision is that at some point we will have the opportunity to actually bring a conference to these kind of countries where there isn't that many conferences, and where also going to conferences abroad is way more difficult because of visas and stuff.
Visas are a nightmare for certain people, and it doesn't make any sense, because like, why stop someone from going to a conference just because of where they were born? That doesn't make sense to me. I'm really sorry for all those people who have visa problems.
Yeah, it's a really big issue, and like, it's one of the things that I hate the most about organizing conferences, is when people want to attend but they ask you, hey, we need a visa, how can you do? And you know that I'm from Tunisia, so I used to have these problems. Mm-hmm. And I know that just to have an appointment, it takes like 6 months. So people would need like 1 year in advance to start planning to attend the conference. And that's like makes just no a sense. Horrible experience. So yeah. But so let's close this.
Antarctica, you need no visa for Antarctica. You could hold one in Antarctica.
Yeah, we'll think about it. So you mentioned that you were working at Microsoft as part of the Playwright team. So can you tell us a bit more about your role at Microsoft and also Playwright for people who don't know it?
Yeah, so Playwright is basically a framework for testing your applications. So when you look at a website, for example, and you want to test that the user is capable of doing everything that they should be doing on that website, be it throwing something into a shopping cart and paying for it, going from one page to another, anything that the user is doing. So it's about testing that. And before, a lot of people were testing, like, you know, the code, like making sure your code does this, right? But we're very focused in testing what the user does, the end-to-end testing from the start of that user journey to the end of their unit user journey. What they're doing and testing that along the way. So that's basically like Playwright makes it easier because it automates your testing. So previously, and me personally, I previously was one of those people who on a Friday, we would push to production and then everyone would stop work for 2 hours and be like, go test the website, click on every button and see if it works. And then write down what doesn't work and then go and fix it, right? That was testing to me. That's what I knew. and you're laughing, Eamon, but there is a lot of companies out there that are still testing that way, right? And then you have manual testers who actually get paid. We weren't manual testers. We were just the developers. Other people pay manual testers. And I'm not saying that manual testing is like manual testers don't have a place. I'm just saying that, you know, some people will rely only on manual testers. And that's humans, that we're going to make a mistake. And also, it takes a lot of time to be clicking all those buttons on a big website every time something changes.
Yeah.
So automating the process and making a computer, like programming the computer to click the button, fill out the form. Think about filling out that form for that visa, right? How many How many fields do you have to fill in? When you're testing that manually and you start filling it all in and then you get to like, and you got to do it all again and do it all again, that's a waste of time. You're wasting company time. Automating it means do, it's done in a second. Because no matter how fast of a typist you are, a computer is always going to be faster than you. That's a fact. So yeah, basically automating the testing. So my job with Playwright is making sure that the world knows that Playwright exists, right? Playwright is pretty new. It's about 3 years old. And some people don't know Playwright exists. So my job is like telling them it is, and also changing people's attitude towards testing. People think testing is hard. Testing used to be hard. People think tests are flaky. Tests used to be flaky. People think testing, that there's, you know, it costs a lot of time, a lot of money, so they don't do it. It's like not prioritized by companies. But this is all now in the past. Things have changed. We have great tooling, great frameworks like Playwright that help you write tests that make your life easier. And I'm trying to like get people to see that testing should be part of the developer journey. As you're building your product, writing your tests at the same time, not, I'm going to build this, and in 2 years' time, when I've shipped to production, I'm going to write the tests. Well, it's a bit late because, you know, code is changing all the time. You've got to be building along with it, right? And you'll never have the time. If you put it off, you'll never do it. Always do it right now. So yeah, my job is basically to help build a community around testing and help them in whatever way with, like, you know, courses and videos and help you learn it, even though it's super, super simple. Playwright is so easy, but even just showing someone how easy it is by using the right tools, what tools do we have? And then, getting as many people on board as well, because we've had, like, we've built a community and the community have been able to help each other out. We've got a Discord channel. I can't answer all the questions. I'm only one person, but the community is like helping each other out. And that's insane. So yeah, my job is building that community around Playwright, around testing, and changing the world so that when we click on a button, we don't get frustrated that it doesn't work and get annoyed and stop using a website and a company loses money because of that. Let's fix that by just writing tests and getting the world testing their applications.
Well, I like the way you said it. It's really nice. what makes Playwright unique? What are the key features that differentiate Playwright from other testing tools?
I mean, I think we have a lot of things in common, and then there are some things unique, right? So if you're like already using other frameworks and you kind of say, well, why would I, you know, change to Playwright, etc. A couple of things are like the tooling that we have, for example, the trace viewer, being able to see a trace of your test. This is really important when you're testing on CI. You know, when your test breaks, like it works on my machine, right? And then you like send it up to GitHub or whatever, and all of a sudden your test fails and you're like, but it works on my machine, why is it failing, right? And then how do you go and investigate on continuous integration why that test is failing? Well, using the trace viewer is a great tool that we have, that you're able to see a trace. What is a trace? It's like, you know, what happened from a visual point in time of what happened between there and there, and you're able to go back into that and kind of see every single click that happened and what happened and why it didn't work, right? It could be a cookie banner popped up, for example, on the CI, and you're able to see that and you go, oh, I know why that failed on CI, because CI's machine is maybe a bit slower, a bit faster, didn't catch it, right? Your machine is different. Mm-hmm. My machine is different to your machine. Kind of things. The trace viewer is definitely one of our great tools. We've got a UI mode as well, so you're able to like visually see your test being written. Like instead of just writing your code and seeing a console like test passed, right? Because that's kind of just like, okay, my test passed, but do I believe it passed? So having UI mode open allows you to go and see the clicks that you actually did. So you can kind of see what you tested, see where you went wrong. It makes debugging obviously really easier as well. And then also we have a recorder that records your test. So you can literally like just click on the website and do the user journey, and Playwright will record everything for you. It will give you all the code. So like my mother can write tests. Like literally my mother can go and use Playwright. That's how easy it is. She's not going to like eventually do a great job, because, you know, she'll do the basic and then that's it. But what my point is that anybody can write a test. So you don't have to be like this superhero in testing to come into the testing world. I think that's really unique in the testing scene, is that like we make it as easy as possible for the whatever user you are, whatever place you are starting in your testing journey, that you can get on board and write tests by using the tools we have. Don't use ChatGPT. Don't use just like Stack Overflow to write your tests. Use the tooling we have, because we will choose the best locators for you, so that, you know, it can find a locator is what you use to find an element on the page, for example, a button or a header or whatever. So yeah, there's some of the things. And then Playwright will wait. It will auto retry. So it means like if the JavaScript hasn't loaded on the page and Playwright goes and like tries to find the button's not there, it's going to wait for that button to be ready. So you don't have to set timeouts and things like that. And then it's going to auto retry it. So if it clicked it once and it was disabled for whatever reason, it'll try it again. And then it's like, oh, now it's ready. So that stops you from having to do all that hard work of like, oh, my page takes 2 seconds to load. I need to add a timeout to wait for this. No, you don't need to do that. We do it all for you. There's so many other things. I could talk about Playwright forever. So definitely encourage you to give it a try, because it really is fun. And I think that's the kind of, for me, the best part about Playwright is writing tests is fun, easy and fun.
Well, actually, I'm currently working on a project with Playwright, so I totally understand what you are saying, and especially with the locators, because like so I used some testing generators before, and each time like you end up with really messy code and really messy locators that use some XPath or something. But the really good thing that I have when using Playwright is that it kind of pushes you to so I guess it was some kind of collaboration with our testing library, because it
we
also
worked with
kind
Kenzie
of pushes...
Dodds
yeah
we worked with Kenzie Dodds on it, because we didn't have it before, and it was actually I sat down with Kent and we were going through some of like Playwright, and he came back with feedback, and his feedback to us was, I really like Playwright, but I don't like this about it, because it's means that my locators are not very stable, like you can make mistakes easy with types and things like that. And he kind of suggested that he would love to use testing library and Playwright together, but he doesn't want to use testing library and Playwright together. He wants testing library kind of like to be almost inside Playwright, right? When we talk about the kind of way locators are written. So we sat down with him and took his feedback on board and worked with him to kind of say, what are the kind of like the ones that you would want to use in Playwright? Like what would be the best ones? So, you know, the get by role, for example, role is really important. Get by placeholder, you know, test ID as well is still useful because people still want to use test IDs. And then get people kind of testing on a, like what the user sees first, rather than testing with XPath and CSS, because your page will change. You'll change your CSS, you'll change your HTML, your DOM will change, but the button, get by text, for example, that text maybe shouldn't change if it's something like accept all in a cookie banner, right? If that suddenly changes to don't accept and it's the wrong way around,
like,
you want to know about that.
Yeah, also like if you change that, then you know you changed it, and it's easy to go and change the test that uses that text or label. If you change the parent component or something, you don't impact the button itself or the label.
Yeah, or imagine you changed your website and started to use Tailwind instead of Bootstrap, right? Mm-hmm. Now all your tests are going to fail. You're going to have to rewrite all your tests.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that would be horrible. So then you don't change your CSS because of your tests. Like, do you know what I mean? So you shouldn't be, like, sometimes you can have an odd CSS in there. Maybe you're testing some CSS, fine. But don't write all your tests based on CSS. And even test IDs, I would say, like, test IDs are fine if you need to use them for certain situations, but not using it, like, testing all your site by test IDs is also not right, because that's not what the user sees. The user has no idea what that test ID is. So bringing your tests closer to the user. And that's where we see like it's kind of similar to what testing library does. Very, very important, user focused. And yeah, that makes Playwright much better for testing.
And that's where I think the generator does a really good job, is that actually you test manually once and it creates an automatic test. Like it's just amazing to have that. Like you do a manual test once and you get end-to-end testing for free almost. So,
And it's things like get by role, right? Some people like, well, I don't know the accessible role for that. You know, a button is get by role button. Okay, that's pretty easy. But there's a lot of accessible roles you don't know, but we will give it to you. So you don't have to go off and learn accessibility. You should learn accessibility, but you don't have to. You don't have to inspect the DOM to kind of understand where that role is coming from. We do it all for you. So this is all being done. You can happily go and check it if you want to and change it and modify it, but you don't have to. Using our tooling, we'll just get all these, you know, the right locators for you, so that you just have to worry about thinking about what should I test, as opposed to worrying about the little things of what is the accessible name of a specific element on a page. You shouldn't need to know about that because the user doesn't know about that. So when you're writing your tests, use our tooling and that will just get you bang, just done, out of the way, easy.
Awesome. And one of the things that I struggle with currently, because I'm working with Plier quite a bit, is that to find the right balance between what I need to test and what I should not avoid testing, but it's not that important to test. Because like if you test all the different use cases and scenarios, you're probably going to end up with tests that take maybe weeks to finish, because the CI is still going to be slow. So what would be your advice to kind of find that right balance?
It's kind of like that, 100% test coverage. Look at me, I'm so cool. I've got like 100% test coverage. And it's like, you don't need 100% test coverage. What's really important is to test what's important to your website. And every website is different. So for example, actually, I'll give you a great example. I was submitting my maternity leave so that I got paid for maternity pay over the last month and a half ago. And the website, the buttons that says, you know, I don't know which one I had to click, because all these kind of buttons and links. Someone messed up. I don't know who. Someone messed up in the Social Security of the Spanish Social Security website, and all the website. I took a screenshot and I will do a talk on this because it's incredible. All the website was, the buttons were all like BTN-SM- right? Every single button text was the CSS class. So the whole page was full of CSS classes, all their buttons and links. And it was impossible to know which one to click because you had no text. You visually saw CSS classes. Now, I knew what it was, as in CSS classes. Other people would have went, this is gobbledygook. Like, what is going on here, right? The thing is that I was like, maybe it's me. Maybe it's like my cookies or something has gone wrong. So I sent it to my team in America. They all kind of saw the same thing as me on different computers, different countries, different browsers. And I was like, wow, because I didn't believe it was possible. Obviously, they had no tests. So somebody made a change, submitted up there, and there was no get by role button with a text, submit your maternity leave. So it meant that I didn't get paid, because I couldn't fill in my maternity leave on time and the date then passed. Wow. So I had to wait the next month to get paid because of some developer made a mistake, didn't write tests, and the Social Security website was gobbledygook with CSS classes for a good few days. That's basically something you should test. You should test what the user, like in this case, you might say, well, the Spanish Social Security just wanted to pay Debbie. So it's probably better for them that they didn't pay Debbie because they kept money, right? But think about it the other way around, right? If you're a company that's, you know, receiving money and that person cannot click on that link, cannot add to the shopping cart, cannot pay, that's a big problem for your team. Maybe the about page doesn't need to be tested. That link is maybe not important to you. So leave that to last. But maybe it is. Maybe the about page is what people study about you to hire you as a carpenter to build a wall, right? That's important, that about page. So you know what's important to you. What should the user do? What is the user journey for your website? Think about, and then just kind of like prioritize it and write the test, the most important one first. Can Debbie get paid maternity pay? write that test first, right? Because if I can't get my maternity pay, I was very upset. I have a whole month, I didn't get paid. Just because someone didn't write tests and didn't use Playwright. Like, seriously, that's life. We need people writing tests.
Yeah. And I don't know if you have this, but as a developer, it happens to me so many times, even in like huge companies' websites like Airbnb or LinkedIn or whatever, that I have to open the console and go look in the console to understand what is happening. Because, like, for example, sometimes an error is just like something wrong happened, try again. And then I go and I look that actually in the response, there is some file that is too big. And like, it's just, we are developers, so we understand these things and we can do something about it. But imagine for people that don't understand and they try for hours to upload a certain
file. I did this for my brother who was trying to rent a car in France, right? Now, the page was in French, so he had this difficulty of not understanding the language. So he's like, Debbie, like, you know, your French is better than mine. Can you just go on that website and see if you can hire this car for me? Because I can't seem to pay them. And I went on and I was like, my French is pretty good. So I was like going through it going, okay, it's not your French. This is the website. So I went, it's a problem with the phone number. So basically, it wouldn't accept the phone number because he wasn't French and it would only accept a French phone number, which is made up of I don't know how many digits that they were looking for. So what I ended up having to do was go into the console log and find out like a placeholder phone number that, you know, was kind of somehow put in there and copy that phone number. And I put that phone number in and he was able to rent the car, the French car, but the phone number was the placeholder phone number from the console, from the dev tools. So yeah, he would have just given up and not rented that car. But I was like, I'm not going to let this get to me. I'm going to find out what is going on. I went through everything. I was like determined because the one error came up, said, this form has an error. It didn't tell you the phone number has an error, yeah. Right? It said, there's an error in the form. Please try again. Like, you know, and you try and you kept try every single field, keep changing it. Eventually I found it. Testing.
Amazing. So to come back to Playwright, like what would be, are there any key features or features that you are excited that are coming to Playwright soon or that you are currently working on? Of course, if it's not top secret thing.
Well, I've just literally started back after maternity leave, so the latest release is about getting rid of those cookie banners. You know, when you have cookie banners that pop up and they kind of like come up at different times depending on like how long it takes, and then, you know, as a user you're writing your test and then like you got to accept these cookie banners. So we have something that built into the next version that's just been actually released, and I'm doing a video right now on it about helping you get rid of those, closing those pop-up dialogues, cookie banners, or sign up now, or, you know, pay me all your money, go away, or, you know, did you know, those kind of banners, getting rid of those in the testing scene so that you're able to continue testing and not have those make your test flaky by, like, you know, when they pop up at irregular times. So that's something. What are we working on? I don't know, because I haven't been back long enough to literally sit down with the team and say like, what's our plan? What are we doing? I could hint a couple of things and say that we might be working on, and then see if the community, because we are very community driven, right? It's really important for us to do things that the community want. Because if we do just what we want, like, people won't use Playwright ever, right? We want to do what do you want? What are you missing from Playwright? And we've built a lot of things, like, you know, Kent's feedback brought us those locators. Other feedback brought us UI watch mode, UI mode, that came in from feedback from the community. What do people want? I know people want mobile testing. We're not working on that because that's really hard and we're not mobile people. We're browser based. So What can we do in the browser to help people write better tests? A lot of people are looking for component testing and taking that out of experimental and you know, putting more work into it. Are we going to work on that? Maybe. But let's see what the people want. Do people want that? Is that worth us, you know, putting all our efforts into? So there's so many things we can do we don't have enough time to do everything that we want to do. And there's so many ways that we can improve playwright. But definitely what I want to focus on personally is more learning and awareness of how to get started, how easy, because it's so easy, but people are not making that journey. They'd rather like type into ChatGPT, write a playwright test for a shopping cart, and then like you get this whole mess. And it's like, it's not ChatGPT's fault, right? But it's like, we have tools that build this the right way. We've worked hard to build this, so go and use it. How can I teach these people about the toolings that we have? So I want to do more like, you know, learning material and helping people more. And with playwright, I guess, I don't know, maybe component testing, maybe what do people want? Tell me what you want. Go onto our Discord channel, go onto GitHub, onto issues, and upvote issues. That's how we choose what we're going to work on. So upvote the issues that you see that you go, we're missing this in playwright. We want this, and we want this, we want this. Upvote those issues, and then we'll start working on them if we have capabilities, knowledge, time, etc.
Well, amazing to see that you're very user-centric and that you actually rely on your users telling you what's important for them. That's very nice to hear.
Yeah, because if not, all our users come from so many different backgrounds, right? And that's mm-hmm. testing. You're testing your product on so many different types of users. That's what every company in the open source world should be doing, right? But yeah, listening to people, that's what open source is all about. It's listening to the communities.
Awesome. So before we're almost at the end of our time. So I want to ask you the usual question that we ask to every guest that we have. And so the first one is, what are some technologies, libraries, frameworks, whatever, that you are most excited about for the upcoming future?
Yeah, there's quite a lot. And I had like 3 months where I had no tech, right? I took 3 months away from tech, which is a world, right? Because so much has happened. I come back like, oh my God. I haven't had a lot of time, obviously, to kind of go deep into a lot of the new stuff that's been out recently. And I say recently is like over a year ago. But something I would love to kind of play around when I haven't done is Astro. I think it has a great future, and I've seen some great talks by a great speaker, Elian, does some amazing talks on it. And I would love to learn more about Astro. So definitely I would say Astro. And then I don't know if there's other things out there, because I haven't even seen what's out there, because things are changing so fast. But yeah, framework wise, definitely Astro. And then I need to like go deeper into Nuxt 3. There's a lot of changes in Nuxt that have made it even better. I want to like dive into that and learn more. Even like Vite has done so much cool stuff. Like really just, yeah, everything. Amen, everything.
Awesome. And the second question is, how do you see web development in 5 years? Like, how do you imagine it?
Oh, gosh. 5 years is a lifetime in tech, isn't it? You know, I think we're trying to solve a lot of problems in tech because we're moving at such a vast pace. And, you know, I don't think people could have seen how fast companies got on board to be online. Companies put their products into the cloud, right? This has been like, we've seen a massive change in this, right? And that means there's a lot more developers needed. There's a lot more people coming, you know, straight out of college and straight into really good paid jobs that like would have taken you 10 years to get, right? So what's happening is that we're getting a lot of the developers who don't have a lot of experience. And I don't mean experience in coding. I mean experience in like in the world itself, right? So what's happening is we're building tools to help people be better, be faster, and not rely on having to have 10 years of experience. And that means we're creating things that are going to go wrong, right? You know, developers are going to make a lot more mistakes. I can see developers not having the knowledge of like the 10 years that they had to have to get to the managerial position. And now they're going to be like, you know, tech managers, which is great and fair play to them. Amazing. But they're going to run into problems that they don't know how to solve. And they're going to rely on AI because they don't have that experience, or they don't have that person to look up to, because all those people have retired and, you know, gone from the tech world. And that means we're going to rely on more tools, more helper tools to help you. We're going to have to build a lot more of the tooling to help people be able to do better jobs and make the right decisions. Testing is going to be a massive, I can see testing go upwards incredibly more because we have the developers on board that don't have the experience that they, you know, should have. And they're going to need to test their websites because they're going to make mistakes, because if we made mistakes and we had a lot more experience, you know, it's obvious that other developers are going to make a lot of mistakes, and their frameworks are changing at such a pace that we're going to go from Nuxt 2 to Nuxt 3, for example. And then in 5 years' time, it could be Nuxt 8. Nuxt might not even exist. Astro could be something else. And your website, if you're not going to test it, there's going to be a lot of problems. I don't know. I think it's so exciting because nobody has an idea. Nobody knows. But yeah, definitely a lot less using your head and a lot more using AI and using other tools to help you do a better job so that you're happier and, I don't know, things get done quicker and you can go off and do more sport.
Oh, that's actually something that I wanted to ask you about. Like, how do you manage to do that much sport? Because I think it's really important for devs in general and for me also. Like, how do you manage to do that much sport while working a full-time job and now having kids as well?
You know, it's about prioritizing, right? It's about kind of like now I have just started back work and I now have two very small babies that I need to feed and look after. And, you know, it's like my time, my whole life has changed, right? And I'm speaking to other mothers out there, not in the tech, but other mothers in the normal world. And they're also asking my advice and saying, how are you managing to find the time? Like, and they have one baby and I've got two. And it's like, but, you know, it's about getting up in the morning, right? It's really easy to stay in bed on a Saturday and kind of like, oh, I'm tired, I'll just sleep in. You got to get up. You got to get up every day. You just got, oh, I'm tired. Oh, I'm going to get up. You get up and you might go, oh, I'm not in the mood for doing this day. You've got to do it. You got to put on your shoes and you got to, I've built a little gym in my garage and I call it a gym, but it's, I'm talking about like a green mat on the floor and, you know, and a Pilates mat and a couple of things, right? But I call it my gym because it's my happy place. And I go down there every day. Every day I go down there for at least half an hour, right? I make myself do it. This is my priority. This is part of my, of me doing it. Now, I've got two kids. How am I going to manage that? Well, I bring them down with me and I can put it on the floor, on the mat. Today I was in a class and the babies wanted feeding in the middle of my sport. Well, you know, I've got to feed them. So you just stop. You can still squat, right, while you're breastfeeding. It's totally possible. So it's all about finding the time and not saying, I can't do it. I can't do it. I don't have time. If you don't have time, yeah, stop using Facebook. And I don't mean to be bad about Facebook, but people spend way too much of their lives on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, whatever. Stop using social media so much and actually use your time wisely. Make the decision and say, I'm going to do half an hour sport today. Well, make that the first thing you do. And if you do that half hour sport, then go and use Facebook and Instagram and all that other stuff, right? Prioritize. You can waste your life away on a computer so easily.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Thank you, Debbie. Thanks a lot. My last question is, where can people reach you if they want to discuss? And what topics are you most passionate about that you want people to discuss with you?
Yeah, so I have a website called debbie.codes, so you can go to that. I haven't done anything in the last 3 months, so you might find my blog posts are out of date now. Like, Debbie hasn't done anything. What's happening? But yeah, definitely debbie.codes. Follow me on Twitter. I'm pretty active on Twitter, to be honest. LinkedIn, I do try and do a little bit as well, so you can find me on there. But all the links are on my website, so if you go to debbie.codes, you can go there and see everything. My GitHub is there as well. And then, like, what am I excited about? I'm excited about testing. Obviously, if you want to talk about testing, Playwright, like, reach out. My DMs are always open. So, you know, feel free to send me a message and, you know, chat about something. I can't come on and give, like, half an hour like playwright material or workshop. Courses or whatever to everyone individually, right? So don't come and say, oh, can you like, you know, but definitely if you want to reach out and just chat about playwright or testing, or you have an idea or something, totally cool. As well, in our Discord server, you can reach out about playwright stuff there. All about twins right now as well. So if you're a twin mother in tech or a twin father in tech, I'd love to hear about you and how you're dealing with the back to work and programming with twins. And, you know, when do you start getting your babies into tech? They're 3 months old right now, so I've got time. But, you know, are they typing before they're actually writing? I'd love to, like, know about that. And conferences, speaking at conferences with kids. That's going to be something as well. I'd love to hear from other people how they've managed that. And, you know, yeah. Talk to me about anything. Sport as well. I love talking about sport. And I talk too much. Awesome. Eamon, I talk too much.
No, you don't. Oh, my God. Thank you so much, Debbie, for agreeing to this. Oh, by the way, for the audience, before I forget, we are organizing React Paris soon on the 22nd of March, and we have, I don't know, like maybe 20 tickets left. So if you would like to attend, check out our website. It's react.paris, and we hope to see you there because it's going to be an amazing conference. And again, nice. Debbie, thanks a lot for agreeing to this, and I hope I will see you in one of our next conferences. As I told you, you're one of my best speakers.
Thank you. Yeah, I would love to be there. Your conferences are amazing. You're great organizers. Very diverse conferences. So I definitely would recommend anyone to attend it or apply as a speaker for any of the conferences that you guys organize, because you just do amazing. So yeah, thank you for having me as well.
Thank you. Thank you so much. See you. Bye.
Bye.